Chapter 12 0723 hours, July 4th, 2553, Military Calendar. Executive Office Suite, Montero Vitality Center, Montero Cavern Surface, Campos Wilderness District, Planet Gao, Cordoba System. Floating above the anteroom's polished swirl stone floor, the military map of the Montero Cave System was a hopeless holographic tangle. Multicolored lines representing passages of various sizes and conditions snaked around each other with no discernible logic, and huge chunks of the array remained completely unmapped and blank. Still, Murtagh Nelson could feel a glimmer of insight tickling at the back of his mind, some subtle connection that his unconscious had made and not yet deigned to share. There was something there, a pattern that didn't look like a pattern. An underlying structure he had yet to identify. Murtagh retreated to one of the plush brown sofas that sat along the anteroom's looming glass walls. Like all of the furniture in Montero Vitality Clinic's executive office suite, the lavish piece reflected the extravagant tastes of a designer unbridled by considerations of cost. Murtagh dropped into it lengthwise, resting his head on the sofa's well-padded arm and his dirty boots on a soft leather cushion. For the second time in the last 10 minutes, Murtagh's aide-de-camp stepped to his side and tried to interrupt. "Commander Nelson, if you have a few moments, there are a few things I need to bring to your attention." A young Oni captain in a pressed khaki BDU, Vartan Gisirian was a blonde, squarely built man who looked out of uniform unless he was wearing a communications headset or carrying a data pad. "The protesters around Wendosa spent the night testing Charlie Company's motion sensors and thinking," Murtagh snapped. Terrified that the intrusion would cost him the insight working its way to the surface of his mind, he pointed Gisirian toward an overstuffed chair on the far side of the room. "Sit." Gisirian stood his ground. "My apologies, Commander, but you really should—" "Sit now, Captain," Murtagh ordered, "and be quiet. Be very quiet." Gisirian's ivory complexion grew even paler. Then he pressed a finger to his headset's earbud and retreated to the chair. Murtagh exhaled 3 times, trying to clear his mind, then turned his attention back to the holograph. "Wendell, give me a top-down view." The holograph tipped toward Murtagh, presenting a wide ring of densely snarled passages. Since the Gauss had long since mapped the cave system near the surface, the only blank area was a circle in the middle, where the terrain fell below mapping level. Still, even the local guides had never been able to find any entrances from the interior of the blank area. And that seemed odd. Murtagh had contemplated this mystery area before and remarked that it made the cave system look like a bird's nest. But he realized now that the analogy had been misleading him. Had the system truly resembled a nest, there would have been a floor to it, an area at the bottom of the map where the cave passages turned inward. Instead, the blank area seemed to extend downward forever. The tickle in the back of his mind began to grow stronger. "Very good, Wendell," he said. "Now overlay a transparent image of the surface terrain. An actual reconnaissance photo, if you have one that covers the area." "Of course I have one," Wendell's voice issued from one of the anteroom's ceiling speakers. The operations people insisted on a complete set. An image of the jungle appeared on top of the cave maps. For the most part, it all looked the same. A mottled green blanket laced with gray rivers and yellow gravel roads, flecked here and there by the red-roofed blemishes of a village or minor spa. But in the center of the image, directly over the blank area, sat a circular, cliff-walled basin. According to the map, the locals called it the Well of Echoes. The tickle in the back of Murtagh's mind swelled into a full vibration. Recalling that the Well of Echoes was only 5 kilometers from the Montero Vitality Center, Murtagh realized it might actually be visible from his current location on the main building's topmost floor. He leaped off the couch, then began to circle the anteroom and peer out through the glass walls. Down in the Vitality Center's well-tended courtyards, a trio of ground crews were bustling about a stubby-winged pelican and a pair of ungainly falcons. no doubt preparing for the morning patrol. Murtagh was more interested in a pillow of fog hanging about 5 kilometers distant. It had been there every morning since the battalion's arrival, hovering above the Well of Echoes until the day grew warm enough to dispel it, and he had failed to understand its significance. The fog was forming as hot, humid air rose out of the basin into the cool evening atmosphere above the jungle. Murtagh turned back toward the holographic map and stared into the unmapped circle. It's acting like a chimney. A chimney? Wendell asked. I'm afraid you're not making sense, Commander. Murtagh pointed at the circle. We've been looking at this wrong. Give me the side view again. The holograph reoriented itself, presenting a panel of multicolored lines so twisted and snarled that Murtagh could not see into the interior of the image. He began to circle the image until he finally found the angle he wanted, a wedge of emptiness flanked by 2 panels of extensively mapped caverns, one directly beneath the Montera Vitality Center, and one 30 kilometers distant, beneath the village of Wendosa. Murtagh stepped back to consider the holograph from afar, and felt a thrill flutter through his stomach. When viewed as a whole, the cave system was shaped like a vase with a narrow base and a broad rim, all surrounding a hollow inner core. Wendell, remove all the passages larger than 2 meters by 2 meters. About a third of the passages vanished, leaving behind a network of meandering conduits that snaked more or less upward at a gentle slope. There, Murtagh gasped. I have it. Jassirian rose and came immediately to Murtagh's side. Sir, if you've finished thinking, we have an urgent situation in 2 minutes, Murtagh snapped. There is nothing that can't wait 2 minutes. Is that clear? But sir, it's a cooling array, Captain Jassirian, Murtagh said, deliberately talking over him. Do you realize how important that is? A cooling array, sir? Jassirian stared at the holograph in bewilderment, or perhaps it was frustration. Murtagh had never been good at reading facial expressions. Is that really something we need to discuss right now? I think so. Murtagh was so excited now that he chose to overlook the fact that Jassirian had disobeyed his order to remain seated. He began to trace individual routes from the bottom of the map toward the top. Look at how all of these small passages wind back and forth, but continue to rise at a steady angle. They're vents, designed to give hot air time to cool as it rises. It was Wendell who objected. I don't see that at all, Commander. There's no evidence to support your theory. No? Murtagh asked. Then reverse the filter. Show me only the passages that are consistently larger than 2 meters by 2 meters. The holograph flickered as though Wendell were having trouble processing the filter request. Then a much less tangled map appeared, one that showed a network of passages meandering upward in a vaguely spiral pattern, more or less evenly spaced, but at varying degrees of steepness and often dead-ending at an underground lake. Okay, Jassirian said. Those are service corridors. Can we discuss that? That's a premature conclusion, Wendell objected. Our teams have mapped only 21.2% of the cave system, so any confirmation is quite... Wait, Wendell, Murtagh ordered. How do you know? Know what, Commander? That we've mapped 21.2%, Murtagh replied. That's a very specific figure for a cave system that even the locals admit is 90% unexplored. So how can you know that we've even mapped that much of it? Again, the holograph flickered, and Wendell took more than a second to reply. It's a projection, the AI said, based on a statistical analysis of what we've already mapped. Interesting. Murtagh said. Had Wendell not been an AI, he might have suspected him of fabricating the answer. We'll have to discuss your methodology later, but for now we need to recall the Spartans. I think we can finally give them a solid objective. Jassirian's expression grew troubled. Sir, I'm afraid that's impossible. Murtagh frowned. They're Spartans, he said. Just send a runner down. They'll find him. Commander, Finding them isn't the problem, Jassirian said. We already know where the Spartans are. At least four of them. And? Murtagh demanded. Spit it out, Captain. That's what I've been trying to tell you, sir. Spartans 087, 058, B091, and B292 all returned to Wendoza 15 minutes ago. They were trying to deliver the crime scene India victim to a Pelican transport when they were attacked. Attacked by whom? Murtagh's gut knotted. If he lost four Spartans to a bunch of protesters, there wouldn't even be a court-martial. Admiral Perengoski would just have him disappeared. How bad is it? We don't know, sir, Jassirian said. The attack is ongoing. Ongoing? Murtagh boomed. And you're just telling me about it now? Sir, I've been trying to tell you about it for... It doesn't matter, Jassirian said. I have your attention on the matter. And you're saying that a mob of Gauss has kept Charlie Company and four Spartans engaged for a quarter of an hour? Negative, Jassirian said. The hostiles are about 1,200 meters from Wendoza, using beam rifles, mortars, and even a few small missiles to pound Wendoza. They took out the transport Pelican and a lot of support personnel with their first wave of attacks. Our snipers are reporting a combined enemy force of Jirohanai, Kigyar, and humans. So we're being attacked by a force of ex-Covenant? Murtagh asked, trying to keep the anxiety out of his voice. Is that what you're telling me? It's too early to be certain, Jassirian said. But that is the way it's looking. It's why I've been trying to get your attention, sir. Murtagh began to feel hollow inside. The war with the Covenant had been over for months, but he didn't doubt what he was hearing. This part of the galaxy was rife with ex-Covenant factions who were still determined to take the fight to the UNSC, and they were finding far too many human allies among the former rebels who dreamed of another insurrection. The 717th had enough strength to hold its own against any force small enough to have gotten that close to it undetected. But if there were Jirohanai involved, it was going to cost a lot of lives. And he had little doubt where Admiral Perengoski would lay the blame. Remembering the aircraft he had seen preparing to launch, Murtagh stepped back to the anteroom's glass wall and looked down into the courtyard. The ground crews were already moving away from the Pelican and the two Falcons, and through the cockpit canopies, he could see the pilots completing their pre-flight checks. The three craft would reach Wendoza in less than 10 minutes. What about force strength? Murtagh's mind was finally shifting into military mode. He didn't have personal responsibility for combat operations, but there were a lot of logistical details that he would be expected to oversee. Which was why, he supposed, Jassirian had been so determined to interrupt his breakthrough moment. And enemy disposition. Strength unknown at this point, Jassirian said, but it may be fairly small. They seem happy to stand off and attack from the jungle. And that's not really Jirohanai style. Well, that's something. Murtagh began to hope that the attack would not be quite the disaster for his career that he had at first feared. Of course, if he recovered the Ancilla, Perengoski would forgive him anything, even losing a Spartan or two. Let's bring all support units to a combat footing and stand ready to support the fighting companies. A shrill whine rose from the courtyard as the Pelican pilot activated his auxiliary power unit, and the Falcons whirled up their VTOL turbines. It was impossible to tell what the three craft might be carrying in their holds, but judging by the Anvil II missile pods mounted beneath the Pelican's wings, their first sortie would be an attack run rather than a troop drop. Jassirian mumbled something into his headset, then said, "Sir, Major Wingate is preparing to launch a ground support mission. He wanted you to be informed." "Of course," Murtagh nodded. Wingate was his military commander, overseeing all aspects of combat and security while the battalion was on Gao. Perengoski's orders had made it clear that Murtagh was not to question his decisions, and so far the Major had made a point of not giving Murtagh the chance. "Tell the Major we're counting on him. I won't interrupt him now, but we'll meet shortly to assess the situation." As Jassirian relayed the message, the Pelican and Falcons were already lifting off. They immediately spun toward Wendoza, then seemed to hang there frozen as a flurry of ground-to-air missiles came streaking out of the jungle. In the next instant, the hulls of all three craft began to spray white tongues of flame. Murtagh remained at the window, watching in speechless horror as the Pelican exploded in midair, spraying shrapnel and burning fuel across a third of the Vitality Center's compound. He began to feel as though he were not quite awake, as though his breakthrough regarding the Well of Echoes and the attack on Wendoza and the missiles streaking out of the jungle had all been part of a terrible anxiety dream, that he would wake up at any moment and find himself lying in a pool of sweat-soaked sheets. But he didn't awaken, and Murtagh was still at the window 2 seconds later when the first Falcon dropped like a rock, crashing into the staff housing complex and demolishing the dormitory where the Gao investigative team had established its morgue. The second Falcon shrugged off the attack, and smoke pouring from its side door swung toward the source of the assault. Its chin gun began to spray cannon fire over the heads of the protesters cowering outside the main gate. Then the pilot adjusted its aim and began to rip the jungle down. Murtagh was still standing at the wall, trying to comprehend the catastrophe he had just witnessed, when pieces of glass began to rain down from above. "Sniper!" Jassirian yelled. Of course. When one was in a combat zone and objects began to burst apart for no apparent reason, it was almost always a sniper. Murtagh was just having trouble accepting that he was actually in a combat zone. That not only was his battalion under attack, but he was under attack. Murtagh turned to dive to the floor, but he was a half second too slow. Jassirian hit him broadside, covering his body and driving him to the floor. "Commander, get—" That was as far as Jassirian made it, before his blood began to pour out over Murtagh.